Here we go, another episode of Football 52. This is episode number 16. We are approaching the 20s. It's an exciting time. Coach Lamb, I think once this year so far, he has missed one of the shows, and we knew it was coming. He's a busy guy. We get it. He's got the family and stuff, too. So he asks some of his assistants to step in once in a while. So it's really a unique opportunity for us to learn a little bit more and perhaps specifically about a certain position group or just an overall portion of UNC football. And joining us today is special teams coordinator James Pazak. Coach James Pazak. Coach, thanks for being in here, man. You got in here just fine. No issues with the whole door thing, man. I'm proud of you.
Piece of cake. That's pretty cool. That ringtone
makes you feel official, doesn't it?
Definitely. And then when the door opened, I was like, oh, here we go.
Here we go. And you got to take the long flight up the stairs. What's this going to be like? We used to be in downtown Greeley. Didn't have any of that stuff. So it's we kind of really enjoy it. We're like, yeah, ring the bell. We'll buzz you up. We're like, the Ritz here, man. It's kind of fun.
It's a really nice studio. Just right down 10th Street. It's
yeah,
fun.
Love it. And of course, we're in our podcast studio. I love this. It gives us a chance to really sit down and, talk. Most of these episodes can take us for about an hour. So are you ready for that? Sometimes these go for quite a while. And I'm always impressed by the end of it, just how much information we can really get out there.
Oh, yeah. I had my cup of coffee. I'm ready to go.
Ready to rock and roll.
Yes, sir.
Well, Coach Pazak, of course, a special teams coordinator. Let's just start. You tell us a little bit about yourself. Coach Lamb, when he's talking about his coaching staff, he does tend to light up. His eyes light up. He's very passionate about his people. And what I love about it is there's typically a deep history behind the relationship. Maybe some guys he meets along the way or whatever, but a lot of guys he has a lot of roots with. You're one of those guys.
I'd say that's an understatement. I had the pleasure of playing under Coach Lamb during his first coaching job. This was back in like 1996 at University of Redlands. So '97. Coach Lamb was fresh off of playing at BYU, and it was my first year of playing college football, and it was his first year of coaching football. So we go that far back. He was the defensive line coach, and I was playing cornerback at the University of Redlands. So we go back that far, and he was there with a good friend of his, Coach Garrett Touje, who's now at NC State. And we, unbeknownst to probably all of us, it was kind of like an all-star cast of coaches, led by Coach Mike Maynard. Our offensive coordinator Ken Miller, who ended up coaching with at Southern Utah. We had Henry Schroka, who's with the Dallas Cowboys. And then we were led by Coach Mike Maynard, who was very instrumental, I think, in Coach Lamb's coaching career. So it was a lot of fun. He is definitely a competitor. He's always been a competitor. We would play intramural basketball and things like that. So we go way back.
Well, and you played basketball there too, didn't you?
I did. I think that's kind of like how I got back into football. I played football growing up. I played all the sports growing up, but my first love was basketball. And I got to go play at the University of Redlands. We had a really good coach. His name's Gary Smith. Just legendary football basketball coach. And but I played basketball kind of like a football player. So the football guys were my buddies, and they would come and watch me play basketball, and they'd be like, you need to play football. So I transitioned into playing football and had pretty good success. It was fun.
Wow. Talk about that transition, though. I mean, you're playing basketball, and then the football pals come in, and they start seeing you, and they're like, this guy's kind of got what we need, as far as a football guy goes. How difficult was that to make that transition?
It really wasn't difficult for me, thank goodness, because I grew up playing football in the backyard. That was back when guys would play tackle football with no pads on and stuff like that. And I played really aggressive type of man-to-man defense in basketball. So it wasn't so hard. And Coach Lamb, the next year, he was our defensive coordinator, and we played a lot of man-to-man, like we call it a cover zero or cover one. And I just covered the guy. They're like, cover that guy. And I'd cover him. So that's just kind of how it evolved.
Talk to us about Coach Lamb a little bit. I've gotten to know Coach, especially this season. Obviously, I was there with his opening press conference, when he was announced as the head coach, and I've interviewed him a couple of times, but now I see him every single week. We're in here bright and early at 7 in the morning on a Wednesday. He's so informative. He's a deep thinker, and I love that about him. Was he always like that, or was he a little more aggressive as he was getting going? You tell me.
I don't think the word aggressive is the term. He was young, so he was like 23 years old. I was 20 years old, so he was just a little bit older than the rest of our players. He's just always been very straightforward. And straightforward is a great attribute to have as a coach. As a player, you really appreciate when coaches straightforward with you. Hey, this is something that you need to work on. This is where you are on the depth chart, those types of things. So I can distinctly remember there was three cornerbacks that we had, and Coach Lamb took the time to talk to all three of us at the same time. We didn't have separate meetings. We were sitting on these bleachers behind our locker room, and he goes, look, all three of you guys are good. It wouldn't be fair to one of you to just play two. So we're going to rotate all three of you guys. And for him to be able to be that straightforward with like high quality players right off the bat, it was just kind of a testament of what, like, the future of him as a coach. He was always just honest, straightforward. He's very competitive. So it's fun to play like sports with Coach Lamb. He wants to win. He's going to give it everything he's got. A lot of the guys that I still keep in contact with from Redlands, they still remember us losing to the coaches in a intramural basketball game, and Coach would like take charges and he'd dunk on people, and so he's super athlete.
So much of talking to him too, because I know he coached under Harbaugh at one point in time. So when you tell these stories and I start seeing some of the things that Harbaugh does following his career, I'm like, yeah, Coach Lamb has a lot of those Harbaugh-isms, I think, too, which is a very positive thing.
Yes, yes. I think that he took a lot from working with Coach Harbaugh and some of the other mentors that he worked under at University of San Diego, and I think that was an instrumental time in his career, too. He talks about it fondly. He talks about like raising his kids when their kids were younger there in San Diego. So coaching is a really fun profession, and you get a lot of different nuances in your life.
It is what I love about it too. And since you've been in here, you know, the last 8 minutes, you've mentioned so many different coaches. It really is a job title that you learn so much from those coaches, so much to the point where you're bringing them up, you know, throughout your daily, you're constantly referencing these guys. That's one of the things I'm so fascinated with. You know, people, you know, in a law office or working in construction, they might have one person that they were like, yeah, I learned how to do that from that guy. But the coaching industry, they talk about a coaching tree for a reason. Because it's not just for the head coach to talk about guys he helped bring up. It's guys that are on their way. They're working on different positions right now with those goals of being a head coach. And you're using little bits of information from all those guys that you came up with.
It's cool. Yeah, you learn from – I mean, I could go on and on with the names of coaches. But I played for some really great guys. And as a coach – maybe you don't realize like how influential you are with the players.
Sure.
You know, like if someone were to, you know, 20 years from now say, hey, I remember Coach Pazak. He brought us the juice every day. You know, that would make me feel good, because really we have the opportunity to influence these young men. And we've been taught all along the way. And you just have to give respect to where you've learned things from. Some of the best moments that I've had over the last few years of coaching, it's just calling the coach that I worked for in California and say, hey, Coach I, what's up? You know, how's it going? Those types of things. So, it's a neat fraternity for sure.
You talk about this caught my attention too, because Coach Lamb's brought this up, how rewarding it is 20 years down the road or something where a player comes back to you. But you also have to practice patience, because maybe forever, this day and age, whatever – kids, student athletes aren't always likely to come up to you and say, man, you're coaching me great right now. You kind of just have to know, and they know maybe, but it's harder for some of these guys to say that. So if you do get that, during the time you're actually coaching them, that's got to feel like a bonus. And then 20 years later, they come back and say, man, yeah, I think about that. Whatever it was you told me, you taught me, I think about that every day.
Yeah, I it's neat. It really is. You know, one of my mentors, his name's Henry Shroka. He works for the Dallas Cowboys. And I remember I got my first job, like once I started working, and he was like, Pays, if you can bring that same enthusiasm and passion into your job every day, you'll be successful. And, you know, it's super cliche. Football is a microcosm of life, but it really, really is.
We're talking to special teams coordinator James Pazak, Coach James Pazak, in our studio today. Coach Lamb will be back next week, I believe, unless you just steal the show here and you take over. That's the danger that Coach runs into here is when you guys are coming in. But I'm so fascinated by, you know, just chatting with you. I've caught up with a couple of players, too. You feel it. You feel the change. You really do. I know we've talked a lot about changing the culture at the University of Northern Colorado. It's, and this is what is making me so excited. I said, darn it, Coach, I'm more invested in UNC football than I've ever been. And I'm an alum, but getting to know Coach and now getting to know some of his coaches, assistant coaches, it is, I'm counting down the days. It's May 22nd. We got a while to go yet, Coach.
We do, but, you know, I'm chomping at the bit myself.
You got the camp season coming up, too. So it's going to be like you're basically in it.
Oh, yeah. It's exciting. We worked really hard in the offseason with Coach Hill and his strength and conditioning staff, Marcus and Hannah. They work really hard, and the boys got strong. So the big focus over the offseason was getting strong. Then we went through spring ball, and, you know, everybody's just kind of getting their routine about how we're going to go about the summer and how going into the season. But it's an understatement of excitement. You know, we have a good like 9 weeks of strength and conditioning over the summer, and then we get into the season. The camp season is fun. It's neat to see some of the kids that we've recruited on the recruiting trail to come up and show what they can do, and then to have the team camps. It's fun. I think the neatest camp for all of our players and the community is the No Limits Camp, which is near and dear to Coach's heart.
Sure.
But it's a lot of fun, and it's so crazy because you'll be in the community and someone will say, hey, you know, my granddaughter's in second grade and she was at your camp and she really enjoyed it and she's looking forward to it this year. So it's just getting better and better.
Well, and Coach Lamb brought that up. Well, actually, we had Miles McClarity was in studio with us once, and we were talking about his fascinating story. And he was talking about that camp, and he's like, I was amazed that all the players were like, we want to go. We want to be a part of this. Everyone's excited about it. Guys are wanting to get to know Coach Lamb's family a lot more too. That's when you really know there's a culture shift going on, because these guys are really connecting with you as a coaching staff. And I think that No Limits Camp is just such a special thing for the community. And it really, you know, for the community, it helps them get to know you guys a little bit more too. So I think it's the right combo of supporting the community, and then in turn that community comes back and says, hey, we want to keep working with you guys.
Oh yeah, we do a lot of stuff. We do the Frontier House stuff, breakfast. We just did Coaches for Charity. And we were able to partner with the Ark of Well County for that.
Sure.
I sat next to the treasurer of the state, Dave Young, and his wife Mary, who's the representative of the state. So we're trying to get involved, and it's kind of happening organically, and that's what's really neat about it. It's not pressed, and I've been fortunate to be a part of some championship teams. And, you know, championship teams, there's just a little something different about championship teams, because when everyone is in it together, great things can happen.
Well, and again, I thank you for doing this. You know, I say this to Coach all the time, the willingness to come in here. I mean, it was 7 in the morning when you got here. You probably had to leave it. I don't know how far you live from the station, but, you know, you're up pretty early to come do this kind of thing. And what I love is you guys light up about it. And you're like, we want to talk about our program. You know, we want to do this. So I hats off to you guys for that, for getting out in the community. Little things like popping in here to sit with me for an hour. Those things, I'm telling you, Coach, I've done a sports talk show for several years now. And when you hear people say, well, is that coach, is he buying into the community? Is his staff buying into the community? Not everybody knows what that looks like, but we know what it doesn't look like. Mm-hmm. You know, we know when it's like, well, you never see those guys. That is not the case with this entire group.
We're fortunate. I mean, shoot, the community's taken us in, you know. We all moved our families and came to Greeley in, with the intentions of doing great things right off the bat. And it takes time, and it takes the whole community to kind of like appreciate us and for us to appreciate them. So, yeah, from the get-go, you know, the schools have welcomed my family. You know, the youth sports teams, you know, the Weld County Bears, you know, let my 9-year-old play football with
sure.
them. You know, we meet like really neat families throughout, you know. My kids go to university school, and my kids came to school like in February, right? Middle of the school year. It's not unique. It's unique. So they were welcoming to our kids, and my kids play baseball for the NoCo Bulldogs, and, you know, Garrett Tim and his family, they were open to our family. So it's the least we can do is give back to the community. I mean, this is where we live, you know. It's not a foreign place. We're here to do our job and help these football players become great men. And I think the whole community is what it's all about. I mean, I think when we first got here, one of the first things we did as a team, we went to the food bank. We had like 20-30 kids at the food bank. Like, and so kids are so competitive. They're trying to see how much food they can package, you know, how many pounds did we get? And the gals that were working there, they were really kind to us. And then like now our players like organize it themselves, and they'll show up there and they'll do it. So it's not fake. It's real. And it's what it takes to build a championship team.
I can't tell you how many players have reached out to me just via the message, you know, social media and stuff, when Coach was hired. And now throughout this process, just like, hey, we love what we're hearing. We're really excited. I've had parents reach out. I've had diehard fans reach out. And that's what I love so much about this podcast, too, is it opens up. I've never talked about any team this closely before. This is what's really powerful for me. So when people are like, wow, that Football 52 podcast is great, it's like, I'm just sitting in here. The willingness for you guys to open up and come talk football with me, mm-hmm. that's the dream right there. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I know enough about football to be able to talk about some of the storylines and things like that. But the deep stuff that we get into here, I'm sitting here taking notes all the time. I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to be so good at Madden now after talking to you guys. This is going to be fantastic. You said Greeley wasn't like a foreign place to you, but you have been to a foreign place before. You played football in Italy. You got to talk to me about this experience too. I'm always fascinated by the stories that lead you to where you're currently sitting as a special teams coordinator for the Bears.
It's a cool story, man. It's a cool story. So I played football at University of Redlands, and I had a successful 2 years that I played. And like I talked about Coach Schroko before, he always would tell me, "Pace, you need to keep playing ball. You need to keep playing. You could play on Sundays." And as a football player, like, oh, Sundays?
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
So I just kept in shape. I got a real brief personal tryout for Saskatchewan Rough Riders in the Canadian Football League, and that didn't work out. And he said, just keep staying in shape, keep staying in shape. And I got a phone call one night from Coach Carlos Brosio, and he was in Italy. And he goes, are you James Pazak? I said, oh, yeah, I'm James Pazak. Nice to meet you. He's like, I wondered if you're available to come and play for my team in Italy. And I'm like, well, sure. You know, I thought it was almost like a joke. But lo and behold, I got to go over there and play. And I played for I didn't know it was the best team in football at the time. We were the Bergamo Lions, and we won a lot of games.
Wow.
We won the Euro Bowl championship, which is like the Super Bowl of Europe, in 2000, 2001, and 2002. And then we won the Italian Super Bowl at the same time. It was neat. I actually talked with the general manager who signed me yesterday via WhatsApp.
Seriously? Wow.
Yeah.
How cool is that to still stay in contact with everybody,
too?
Yeah,
technology's cool.
Well, okay, so obviously a very successful football team. You go there. What's that like? Now, at that point in time, tell me, were you married at this stage?
No.
It was just you by yourself? Here we go.
I was like 22, 23-year-old guy.
Was it scary? Like,
yeah, okay. So they told me – this was back before the internet was like super, super popular. And they said, just go to the airport and there'll be a ticket waiting for you at the ticket counter. So I tell my dad, hey, Dad, you know, they told me there's going to be a ticket waiting at the ticket counter. My dad's like, yeah, right. So we show up at the
ticket. So you're still doubting that this whole thing is happening.
I knew in my heart because I had to get like an Olympic visa.
Okay.
I had to go to like the Italian consulate. Like there's this whole process to be able to be – an international athlete. So I go to the airport and there's the ticket. My dad goes, oh, I guess it's real. And I went. And I didn't know Italian. I didn't know any of that stuff. And I show up at the airport and they pick me up at the airport. And we were a really successful team. It was really a lot of fun.
I'm always – to me, that is such a – it's a brave thing too, because if it were just me as a random person doing that, just, hey, I have an opportunity to go there for a month or whatever, just for whatever, I'd be terrified because, yeah. I'm traveling and, oh, here I go, here's the ticket, and you're going to get in this car with people you don't really know, and here we go, you're in Italy. Good luck. Have fun here. But you're also there to play professional football.
Yeah.
So, like, you don't have time to really be too nervous or worried or anything. You got to quickly turn on that, I'm an athlete. Like, this is what I'm here to do. It is a job. That's crazy to me.
Thinking back, I guess it was crazy, but I think when you're young, you don't even realize what you're getting yourself into. But what I realized really quickly is, as long as you make plays and just do good things for the team, things are going to work out. And basically every big game we would have, something good would happen. The ball would find my hands, and I'd run fast and get to score a touchdown. But the best part about playing overseas was the camaraderie that you have with the teammates. And I think that was why I had some longevity over there, is because of my interpersonal skill or gift that God gave me. I had a blast with the teammates. It was incredible. There's a book written by John Grisham called Playing for Pizza. If you ever get a chance, it's a good read, and it kind of, how John Grisham writes like kind of reality, but he puts a twist on it, and it's a story about a guy who goes over to Italy to finish off his football career, and it's a pretty cool read.
Was that about you by chance?
It was not about me. It was not about me, but
you connect so much to it.
Yeah, I think it could have been about Van Pelt. It could have been about Van Pelt. Van Pelt played for that team. I actually played for Coach Sam Pagano. Coach Pagano and Coach Barocio were some of the coaches that I played for there. Coach Pagano is a legend at Fairview in Boulder. I played with a really good legendary running back named Scott Lockwood. He played at Fairview, and he played at USC, and then he went over. And you've heard the name Pagano, Chuck,
yeah,
Pagano,
sure.
Sam Pagano.
Yeah.
So it's pretty neat.
Wow.
I played with some awesome players and guys from all over the world, So I played with guys from Canada. So like there's connections, So when I hear Mike Regal talk about Simon Fraser, mm-hmm. I played with guys who played at Simon Fraser.
It's amazing how small of a world it is too. I mean, when they talk about those connections that you build, whether it's through your playing career or through your coaching career, I mean, that's these guys, because you're at that level for a reason. You're mm-hmm. playing at that level for a reason. You're coaching at this level for a reason. You know football.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody has that ability or that dedication to the craft. So that's why you weed them out as you go. And that's what I think that's what I take from it anyway, is there's a reason you guys all know each other. It's not like there's millions of you, but mm-hmm. And those connections do run pretty deep though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's really neat. It's really neat. And then when you get to see each other or talk to each other, you go right back to what it was like when you were together. A lot of fun.
Did you learn any Italian while you were over there?
Parli un po' italiano.
Oh, my God. See, you could have just cursed on the air right now, and I have no way of knowing what that was. Great
job. I speak a little Italian.
So you do a little bit, like enough to where you could go somewhere. You can go to a restaurant and you could order confidently.
Well, fortunately, we have an amazing restaurant here in town, Pellegrini.
Sure, yeah.
So
I'll write that down.
Before I moved here, my wife and my mom came out and like scoped out the spot so we could find a place to rent. And the realtor, Steve Baker, he recommended they go to Pellegrini.
Love Steve, yeah.
They go to Pellegrini. And Pellegrini is a local establishment. Carlo Pellegrini and his wife, Jessica, they run it. And it's awesome. And so when I go there, I speak Italian.
Do you really? Oh, well.
But I don't speak a ton, but enough to make people giggle, I guess.
I took Spanish in high school, and I'm like, am I in outer space right now? I couldn't do it. And my mm-hmm. brain just couldn't do it. So how cool is that for you? How long did it take you to kind of learn a little bit, enough where you can get from, if you need a, I don't know, a taxi or whatever mm-hmm. you take there, if you need to go get food somewhere or you just need directions, how long did it take you to get that comfortable with the language?
I'd say it probably took me a season. Because I speak Spanish. And so Spanish and Italian are somewhat close. My Spanish helped my Italian. And then when I came back to the United States, my Italian helped my Spanish. And honestly, you go to a grocery store when you live in a little town in Italy and you need to get ham and cheese for your sandwiches. So I didn't understand the whole kilos, right? So the weight is in kilos.
Yeah.
So I had to learn numbers and I had to learn colors really quickly, because you'd be playing defense and a certain formation would happen and all of the guys, all other 10 guys are talking in Italian, changing the coverage, right? And I'm like, I freaked out the first night.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm like, I don't know what you guys are saying.
Yeah.
So I was like, heck, I better learn how to at least do the checks. And so numbers, colors, right, left, all that kind of stuff, you have to learn pretty quickly.
Well, and again, you're there on your own. It's not like you don't have somebody taking you by the hand saying, I got you. I'm going to lead you every single step of the way. Sure, you have mentors, you have coaches and all that. But as far as going and getting ham and cheese and just like knowing the colors – you got to figure that stuff out on your own.
Yep.
Wow. That's such a cool story. And how awesome is that for you to be able to use that? Your playing days. Obviously, you have your coaching stuff too and your resume. But that experience can really speak loudly to, I don't care what year it is, but to current players.
Oh, yeah. It opened my mind like beyond belief. Imagine a kid coming from a small town in Colorado or another part of the country moving here, and they're trying to learn football and how to get to their classes. And, you know, they have to be at weights at this time. They have to go to study hall at this time. So I can empathize with the guys and kind of help them navigate the gauntlet of being a college football player, because I had to do it. Going to Europe, it's like, okay, let's figure it out.
That's a great point that you bring up too, because I grew up in Eastern Colorado, mm-hmm. and I came up here in 2005 to go to UNC. I was terrified. I didn't even have a roommate in my dorm. He didn't show up until October, so I didn't have anybody. So I'm thinking about that. But that's just small town Cheyenne Wells, Colorado to Greeley, which was huge for me. I can't imagine the transition to, oh, I'm going to another country. I'm on my own. I got to figure out how to actually purchase things. Oh, and I have to play professional football too. I have to do all that. I can't imagine.
I think now that you're saying that, it's probably why I played so well, is because I think I mean, football was the easy part. Football to me was the easy part. I've been playing that my whole life, right? Ball comes to me, I catch it. I got to cover that guy. If they kick it, I got to run fast. So that was, I think my, you know, they say like ignorance is bliss. Like I didn't even have time to realize all that was going on. And I have always had a pretty good confidence. That was like the number one thing my dad would always say, just don't lose your confidence. So football was probably the easy part. And the rest of it was all fun. It was a blessing all around.
Oh, what a cool – I know there's probably so many parts to that story too, because you were there for 3 years too?
Yes.
Yeah, I know there's so many. Maybe we'll go grab some lunch at or dinner sometime at Pellegrini's. I would love to. On me, by the way. You order it though, of course.
No problem. I go – there's like my go-tos.
That's
it's
awesome.
Always good there.
Coach James Pazak, in special teams coordinator for the UNC Bears. Talk to us about – how you got here. We started the podcast with your relationship with Coach Lame. You're 20. You said he's like 23 at the time. He's mm-hmm. kind of breaking into coaching. And now here we are. He's the head coach at UNC. He's had a very successful career before coming to UNC, Southern Utah, BYU. When did you guys first reconnect when he got the job, when he knew he was going to be the next head football coach for the UNC Bears?
We reconnected about a year before he got the job here at UNC. I had gotten back into football, and I had a list of all of the important people to connect with along my coaching journey. And Coach Lamb was the highest on the list.
Wow.
And we didn't reconnect until I knew that I was fully committed to coaching. I was moving in a progressive way to where it's like if there was an opportunity with Coach Lamb, I would be prepared. So I left a message on his phone one morning, and I said, I don't know if you remember me. This is James Pazak. If this is your number, give me a call back. And maybe like an hour later, he called. How the heck couldn't I remember you? And he gave me my nickname. My nickname is Paycheck. He goes, I couldn't. You know, how could I not remember you? And I explained to him how, you know, I'd been into coaching for a few years now, and, you know, I was progressing in a way that I wanted to go full time into coaching. And so at that point, he said, you know, maybe if this is really where you want to go, Pace, he's like, come and connect with me. And so he sent me the schedule at BYU spring practice, and he said, come pick a day and just kind of, you know, shadow me and see how it goes. And we connected at that point. And my wife and I went to Provo and spent a little time with Coach Lam and Sarah, and I spent the day with the coaching staff, and I got to meet Preston Hadley that day, and it's a great friend and a great coaching mentor. And it was a really neat experience. And at that time, Coach Lam, he expressed to me, he's like, you know, I thank you. You know, guys like you are what's helped me become successful as a coach, and it wouldn't be except for you guys if I was in this spot. Wow. And so that's really kind of how we reconnected. And then I know Coach's heart is he's a head coach. You know, he likes to do things the way he likes to do things, you know, and it's he's all business. And so when I saw that he had gotten the job at UNC, it wasn't long after that he called me and said, hey, are you and Tiffany still interested in if there's an opportunity? I said, Coach, you let us know where, when, how, whatever level you have, we'll be there. And Coach Lam is really unique in the sense where he'll let people kind of think about things. He's like, well, I'm not taking that. He's like, think about it. I'll call me tomorrow. See if it still feels good. So I called him the next day. He goes, still feel good, Pays? I'm like, yep, let's go. Let's make this happen. And the support of my family is really how we're here, so it's pretty neat.
Well, and I want to just I'll ask a couple things just about the special team side.
Sure.
Too. But again, one of the best things about these podcasts, personally for me, is getting to know you and that connection and how that works. You know, I love the fact that he says to you, "You're saying, hey, say the word, I'm there," and he's like, "Think about it." You know, like I think that is really unique, because if I'm trying to build my staff, I got to check that off the box pretty quickly. I need to get this figured out. But he's, instead of, you know, jumping the gun, I always joke with him and I say, hey, it's the tortoise, you know, the tortoise and the hare. Coach Lam does not sprint necessarily. Not to say when it comes to workouts and actual football and that kind of stuff, yeah, he's going at it. But when I say he's a deep thinker, it's the highest compliment I can give, because he really is evaluating everything that's happening. When I first met him, he didn't say a whole lot, because he's sitting there registering. I mean, he's contemplating, how much do I want to tell this guy? Who is this guy? What's going on with this guy? And then we come back the next time and we're talking a lot more. So then he gets back to you the next day and it's like, I want to see if this thing really stuck. And apparently it did.
Oh, yeah. You know, when you're building a staff like Coach Lam built and continues to build, and even a roster, right? Like, we want guys who want to be here. Like, you can't be half in, half out. So people who have a lot of respect for who they're working with, they don't do things willy-nilly. You know, appreciation is huge. Gratitude is huge within our program. You don't just do things – you don't just talk. Like, I'm a talker. Coach Lam isn't as much of a talker as I am. So I've learned a lot from him about, you know, silence is golden. It's okay to take that pause.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay to take that pause so that you can really think about what you're saying. And the person that you're communicating with knows, like, hey, okay, just don't spout out. Like, be thoughtful in the way you go about your business.
Yeah, I always write down your number. I wrote down the book you referenced. He's thrown out so many different books too. Just things about kind of like that, you know, just certain ways you can handle people, or just certain philosophies in life. And I think that's fascinating too. Coach, let's talk about your philosophy when it comes to the special team side of the ball. This is now when we talk offense. For me, it's easier, because you go offense and go, okay, are you running team? Are you passing team? Are you somewhere in between? And then we can kind of go from there. Defensive side of the ball, Okay, do you really want to value those corners? Do you really you have a great edge rushing situation where you're blitzing the heck out of teams? What's that look like? Special teams, for me, can be a little more difficult. It's obviously extremely important to what you're doing with a football team. We've seen so many monster games, won or lost, when it comes to special teams. But I think for casual fans, me included, what does that look like? You know, when you see a blocked punt or your punt gets blocked or what a great tackle is made. Well, those things don't just happen. I mean, guys make plays, but there's a lot of scheming that goes into what you guys are doing on that side of the ball.
Oh, yeah. It's fascinating. First starts with having good specialists, which we have, right? So we have Hunter Green, this guy.
Amazing. Ridiculous.
Not only an amazing athlete, amazing person, you know, great for its teammates. This is a guy who has the respect of like the key components of our team. So you start with great specialists. So you have to have a really good kicker punter. He's what we call a trio. So he can kick, he can punt, he can kick off, punt, and he can kick field goals. So he can do all three, which is a great skill to have. And then you have to have a really good long snapper. Tama Tuitele, dude's legit. He's legit, and we've also been able to recruit some really good young guys who also be snapping. And then for me, my philosophy is to be able to play fast and free. And in order to play fast and free, you have to have a really good scheme that's straightforward, and the players practice it enough so that they can just play fast and free. You have to try to find some what they call true teamers. So you need to have about three or four guys who can really play like kickoff, kick return, punt, punt return, so that you can count on those guys. And what I'm really learning is you have to be super organized, right? So we'll have up to 120 guys on our roster. And throughout a game, guys can get hurt, and they might be on two or three special teams. So there's got to be communication between the training staff.
Yeah, wow.
And then you have to have like two, three deep on each position so that something really goes down, you know, they're ready to go. Coach Justin Walterscheid did an amazing job. So I have huge shoes to fill going into this season. But like the organization from Coach Walterscheid, Coach Smith, Mike Smith was special teams before he went to San Jose State. All these guys, they very much are helping me along the way. We have a new member to our staff, JB Hall, who was special teams coordinator at Utah Tech, and he's had experience at Georgia Tech. So all these guys are kind of helping. And Coach Lamb is the ultimate special teams coach. So we work in harmony. Everybody has an important role, and I'm excited that Coach Lamb trusts me to kind of spend time with the whole staff, the whole staff and the whole team, right? So each day, Coach Lamb will present to the team, and then I'll spend a few minutes communicating with the team. And what Coach Lamb said to me, and I much appreciate, he's like, we need your enthusiasm and your energy to permeate the whole team. That's why we're putting you in the special teams coordinator position. So I'm excited. Anybody who knows me and when I'm on the field, even if I'm on a 9-year-old baseball field, I can't help it.
You're ready to rock and roll, man.
That's just who I am.
I've watched countless games where, and there's certain coaches. I remember up north, and this guy is no longer the head coach, but for Colorado State, he didn't have a special teams coach. He's like, I'm going to do that. Mm-hmm. And at first I was like, okay, that shows you that the head coach is really valuing special teams above all else because he's going to handle it. He lost games because the communication on the sidelines was just so bad. So you're telling me, thinking about 120 guys on the roster, the sidelines are probably just chaos on a football field. And when Coach Lamb, when it comes to a fourth and one or something and a decision needs to be made, that's a quick decision. You got to be ready for that, but you got to have your guys ready. So on the sidelines, how – like, are you staying close to the core guys that are the leaders of special teams? Because some of those guys are also playing. Some of them might be playing offense. Some of them might be used for defense. What is it like on the sidelines for you on both sides, whenever your team's on defense, whenever your team's on offense?
Yeah. Well, I always try to tell my guys, stay close. Stay close. So the guys that you know that are going to be – so when I was coaching defense, like the guys that you know are like your number twos. Like the guys that – hey, this series, be ready because you're going to be – if something goes down, you're going in. So you tell your guys to be close, right? And then I think it's really important to have deep relationships with all the guys so that when your voice is loud or when you're trying to communicate, like, they're tuned into you. If they're tuned out, if they're thinking about something else, they won't be ready when it's their turn. So that's where, like, the relationships that you build with players, not just on the field but off the field, like, they're like, hey, we don't want to let Coach Pazak down. Let's be ready. Let's go. Here we go. And, you know, there's a lot of instances that happen in a football game, right? I watch film even now, right? Watch as many games as you can so that what do you do in this situation? When the ball is at this part of the field, when it's this, are we going to go for it? Are we going to have, you know, four downs to get the first down? So all those types of things that the casual football player might, or football enthusiast might not understand, that's what we're trying to be ready for.
Well, part of it's got to be, well, the connection part with your players is what's really cool too, is that you're building that up now. I mean, you're building that up in spring ball. You're going to start building that up even more in the camp. You guys are going to be trusting each other. But then you learn those tendencies with the head coach. Does he like to be aggressive in middle of the field if it's fourth and one? Are we kind of leaning one way or the other? And maybe there's a surprise coming. Maybe he's feeling a little energetic on a certain situation and we're going to go for it. So, I mean, for you, like, I almost equate the sidelines to a focus on a basketball team. Like, the second you lose your focus is when miscommunication happens and some guy's not going to get on the field on time.
100%. That word focus is imperative from coaching T-ball to coaching the UNC Bears. When I was up in the booth last year, my job was to do personnel. I'm literally just watching how many tight ends go on the field and off the field. And I would write on my paper, focus, focus, focus. You have to be completely dialed in. It's 3 hours of extreme focus. We're not playing, but I'm exhausted by the end of that game.
You're not watching the game, you know, you're watching it. It's work, you know. You are focused on this, and you're not necessarily. You can't get caught up in it either.
Mm-mm.
I mean, you can't. Oh, there's a big sack on the play. Oh, well, they're getting ready to punt now. We got to be. There's no. Wow, that was a monster play. Just I would be the guy. That's like we did it, and then you know nobody's going out to return the punt the next time. So you're right. That focus just the second you lose it. Is the second you lose your guys too. Because if they see you drop that focus at all, mm-hmm. they might drop it. Even if it's for a split second, that might be the difference between getting out on the field, kicking the game-winning field goal, or being ready for the punt, or there's an onside kick, whatever. It's constant concentration.
Yep. Ed Lamb. He's constant concentration, right?
Yeah,
so
sure.
We want our players to be a reflection of us. So as a head coach like Coach Lamb, like we want to be a reflection of Coach Lamb. He wants us to be our own person, but that's the way he goes about his business on Saturdays. Like we are professional coaches, got to be locked in and focused the whole time.
Yeah, I think again, preaching that is just. You can say it, and then it's one thing to see it play out, and that's what you know. I know what that's the focus for you guys. Your transition last year, were you the safeties coach last year?
Last year, I coached the linebackers.
Linebackers. Okay, mm-hmm. Excuse me. Is that a big change from what you're doing, or what is that transition like?
So, being a position coach, you'll have like I think I had like 10 guys that I was responsible for, and we'd have our. Our daily meeting, just the 10 guys, we'd prepare, you know, all throughout the week, looking for tendencies and working together with the defensive staff. So the defensive staff would work all together in the same room all day, all throughout the week. So as a special teams coordinator, I do have a little bit more flexibility of it's – I'm kind of by myself, but I need to be able to evaluate the whole team. So the weekly operation is going to be a little bit different, and then my daily presentation is different. It's not just 10 guys. It's 120 guys. So when I am doing my special teams meeting every day, I will be I present to the entire team and the entire staff. So it's really an interesting transition.
Sure.
It's not a ton different because it's the same thing. It's like I'm going to be looking for tendencies from the other team. I'm going to be breaking down their past games, all of that kind of stuff. But the day of just communicating with 10 guys and watching 10 guys, I have to be able to communicate with all 120. So it's fun.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but you see this on a lot of teams. The special teams coordinator a lot of times can be the assistant coach. That's who he is. He's the number two on there because you're dealing with so many different – you're dealing with the same guys, but just not – you're not locked in on that one position group. You're dealing with a kicker. And then you're dealing with a fourth-string tight end or maybe a second-string tight end that you just know is really powerful in this certain position. So that special teams coordinator job is very close to that next step of being the head coach.
Well, I think I have a lot of steps to go from that. But nonetheless, it's a lot of responsibility that I don't take lightly. It's helping to see guys develop as players because a lot of times a young player with a lot of talent – that's how they get their feet wet in college football is on the special teams. So it's good to kind of see how the guys develop. Looking forward to so many good recruits that we've recruited to kind of see where they can help us on the special teams and then, you know, transition into being on the field as a linebacker. You know, I was recruiting linebackers last year. So it's like I know there's some really good ones coming through. And those guys can be – huge on special teams.
How does the recruiting process work for special teams? I mean, is it your offense, defense, you're recruiting those guys and then you just are like, hey, we can use them? Or are you actively looking for guys that were monster kick returners or obviously kickers and punters? Mm-hmm. You have to have those guys. So that's part of a recruiting situation. But when you're watching film, are you thinking, man, that guy's going to be able to really be awesome on our kickoff team? Or is it kind of the byproduct? We're recruiting the defensive and offensive players, and then we'll figure out who makes sense for kickoff, kick return, whatever.
Number one, you do recruit the specialists. So, you know, kind of really diving in deep and trying to find the right guys. Fortunately, we have a good kicker punter coming from Minnesota to help us. We have Jackson Smith is a really good, valuable kicker punter holder. But the true players that we don't evaluate. We're not recruiting a kid to be on the kickoff team, right? But we are recruiting athletes, right? So if we see a football player who maybe even a portal kind of kid who is a good football player. So I say a football player, I mean a guy who can run fast, can tackle, can strike. That's verbiage for a really hard tackle. And then you look for guys who, you know, maybe they did kick returns in high school. Maybe they did punt returns in high school. They're fearless, and you can see that on film. But we're not picking a kid specifically for this is a kid who we're going to give scholarship to be the kick returner. We have a lot of really great athletes to choose from, and we're almost recruiting within our own team that we already have.
Yeah, that's kind of what – that seems to make sense that maybe, hey, you're recruiting guys, you're looking at guys, you need athletes, and then when you get them on the team – obviously, the specialist, that's a different story, but then you're evaluating, going, okay, where do they make sense? Maybe they're battling for a position right here. Wow, maybe they go earn a lot more playing time. They go out there and they dominate on the kickoff team. Who knows what's next?
I think it shows like fearless players, you know, guys who the moment's not too big, they can go out there and play very, very well. Like, perfect example is Carver Cheeks. Dude made plays and plays and plays on special teams last year. He started in the first game we're playing at Abilene Christian. I mean, he made like three or four tackles on kickoff or on punt. You know, this is a guy who now we look forward to seeing his career just continue to blossom. But what you see is you see a kid who's not afraid of the moment. He's big, he's fast, he's physical. And this is a kid who's got a huge future ahead of him. And you see it on special teams.
Yeah. We know this at the pro level, too. Special teams can make a lot of players. We know Terrell Davis' situation. We know guys like Rod Smith. We know a lot of those players. And the reason that I think we hear that more and more, too, and we will see the best, sometimes the best defensive players are out there on certain in certain situations, on kickoff or an onside kick or something like that, because it's just so valued. If you can get an edge there on the special team side of things, you can force a turnover, you can get an awesome kickoff cover, get him inside the 15 or whatever, it can completely change the feel of a football game.
Oh yeah, it's the. I mean, it's the biggest change of field position in football is the punt. You know, you have a great punter and you have a great punt team. Get down there, protect first, right? We don't want anybody to block anything, so we have to have a really good protection, and then just get down there and make plays. Get a boomer. We got a guy who can really boom it. Get down there, make a play.
You know, having a superior punter is so critical, because flipping that field, that's just, it's one of the parts that makes football like a chess game. You know, mm-hmm. it's not as easy. You know, everybody wants to see scores and they want to see 54 to 48 or whatever that is. But man, for me, there's nothing better than flipping that football field. And it's just like all the momentum. Oh, they got to go 90 yards now suddenly. We got to make this stop here. And then I think the defense is juiced after that. Everybody gets pumped up after a big special teams play. I mean, that can create the momentum. Maybe it's 0-0 after one, and it's kind of one of those stale type of football games. But you get a big play where you do flip that field, you might see some life injected on the sidelines.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's vanilla, like, most of the time, right? You just want to make sure you don't make mistakes.
It's routine, kind of, yeah.
Don't want to make mistakes. But if you can pop one to the house as a punt return or a kick return, huge. If you can make a turnover, on the defensive side, you can get the ball back. You know, it's huge. So we want to make sure that we're sound in our special teams, and we want to take the opportunities when we can, and we want to from the carryover between our defense, like we're trying to get turnovers when we're on kickoff or punt. So we have a lot of defensive players who, you know, their coaches day in and day out are talking about making good tackles and trying to get that ball back. So we're going to try to do the same type of thing on special teams.
Coach, while we have you in here, I'll ask this question. You played corner in college, and then did you play corner when you were in Italy too?
I played everything.
Everything. So then this is perfect. What is your favorite play as far as like intercept, pick six, kick return for touchdown, deep pass, fumble, scoop, score, whatever? What is your favorite play in all of football?
I think the pick six is pretty awesome. And I loved returning kicks, you know, because returning kicks, if you can hit it full speed, make one cut and go.
It's beautiful.
It's a really cool feeling. It's a really, really cool feeling. And, I mean, I'm telling you all the things I really love. I loved kickoff. When I first played for Coach Lamb, like my first thing, I was like, this was back when you could be a wedge buster. And a wedge buster, for people who don't know, it's like back in the day, a kick return, they would set up a wall, and there was a guy whose job it was to knock down the wall. It was called the wedge buster, and that's what I did. So I loved going down there and making plays. And I want to instill with my players to run down fearlessly. There's not as many returns in the kicking game as there were in the past, but run down fearlessly with our hair on fire, you know, like we're running a 100-meter dash, all gas, no brakes. Get down there. I'd say kickoff. So if you just say kickoff.
It's awesome. Well, what do you think of all these changes going on, too, on the special team side of things, especially when you look at what's going on in the NFL? They had a big change they're going to try out for the year. We'll see if they stick with it. What are your thoughts on that? Where are they moving them again? The kickoffs moving? They're all kind of moving a little bit closer to each other, basically, is what we got to know.
I think I like to follow Fossil, for his special teams coordinator for the Cowboys, and he was instrumental in kind of making that change, because I think what they tried to do is they showed it. I think they did it in like the XFL.
Yeah, sure.
USFL, yep. And now it's the UFL. And they showed that it was one, you still allow the players to play, right? Two, you're allowing players to be safer, and you're able to see returns. And I think that's – people like to watch returns, right? But at the same time, you don't want people to just smack their heads like battering rams, right? It doesn't make sense from a safety standpoint. So what they did was the distance between where the guys are kicking it off and where the ball is being caught is designed so that they can still return the ball. It's not just touchbacks, but it's not going to be as dangerous.
What I'm really interested to see, and Coach, I'm sure you'll nerd out on that too, is with it being a little bit closer, it's not going to just necessarily be, you know, starting from one end of the field to the other and running. It is going to feel almost like a play is how, and again, not to say kickoff and kick return now isn't designed in some sort of formation and creating blocks, but with him being a little bit closer and not having guys running as hard at that kick return team, it might there might be some really interesting designs to see how they utilize that this year.
Yeah, if you go back and you study some of the really good special teams coordinators in the past, like Mike Westhoff, who's with the Denver Broncos still, they like kickoff return was designed like a play, an offensive play. So I think I think you're absolutely right. I think it'll be maybe some nuances, maybe some new fun stuff designed to kind of spring a guy.
It might be, and for the casual fans too, it might be a little more obvious to see some of those plays develop too. So who knows what it's going to be. We'll see if they stick with it after after year one. Coach, before we let you get out of here, I know you talked briefly just about your family and how important they are to you. I mean, a coaching staff or a coach, you know, you guys are you're traveling, you know, you're going to where that job is, and you talked about when you have to decide whether you're dedicated to being a coach. Well, it's not just the job itself, it's the lifestyle of a coach. Mm-hmm. It's that job where, you know, you can, if you fail, you're going to be looking to go somewhere else. Even if you succeed, you're going to be looking to go somewhere else. Like, we know how it is, mm-hmm. but to have that family and hearing Coach Lamb talk, family is everything, you know, to everybody. I mean, he talks about that with his coaching staff, and that means something to him. Take an opportunity to talk to us a little bit about your support staff.
Well, wonderful wife, Tiffany, three boys, J-Mo, Paulo and Mo, 14, 11, and 9. And then behind that, my parents are great. My in-laws are great. They've always had a really supportive family. So for people to be able to go and take that opportunity and to feel comfortable, like no matter what, people have our back. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, One of the coolest things that Coach Lamb helped me through this past season, we had lost a few games in a row, and we were all pretty down, and came in on a Sunday, and maybe the first thing he told me was, James, like, you're dad, and your kids have to know, like, whether you win or lose, you're still dad. And that's kind of put in perspective, like, this is a guy who cares about me as a man. Cares about my family. So, yeah, we're just dads. We're just husbands. We're just sons. But we have a really cool opportunity to coach football, and we don't take it lightly. But support, and that's another reason why we. I mean, I'm not trying to go into another segue, but that's another reason why we recruit Colorado kids, because we want kids to have their support system here close to them. So if something's going on, they're there. And we want to be able to – the families that have kids from out of state know that, like, there's good men on this coaching staff that are going to care about their kids just as they'd care about their own kids.
I think that's – that part right there is so important too, because there's so many reasons to recruit locally. And I've talked about this for years on my show. I was always amazed at, you know, past coaches where it's like, yeah, there's a few Colorado guys, there's 10 guys, whatever, 15 guys, whatever. The dedication you guys have taken to that, for one thing – for me, it's like, we're going to fill that stadium up. There's going to be parents. There's going to be uncles. There's going to be people that supported this kid in high school. We do high school football games, too. Like, we see the fan base that surrounds these guys. Even if they're not related, they're going to be out there. So I love that side of it. But what you just said is also important. Having your people in your corner, even if it's a few hours away, it's still just a few hours away. I think that's important too, especially for development at this age. This is such a crazy age for a student athlete, whether it's what, 18, 22 to 23, having that support system at least somewhat close by is key. Not to say it's impossible without it, but it is very important.
100%. 100%.
Coach, this has been a lot of fun, man. I really appreciate you. Look at this. We hit the hour mark. You know, I think this is one of the second longest episode we've done. So this is good. Good job by you.
Hey, it's a great opportunity. I appreciate you for having me, and I appreciate Coach Lamb for saying, hey, Pace, I think you should do that. It'd be fun.
Well, don't be a stranger. Come back in here now. I mean, this is – I always tell Coach, I'm like, hey, bring other people in if we want to, because it's Football 52. We're on episode 16. We got to find really fun stories, and every single week I'm amazed. We continue to find interesting stories. We get your personal story about your football journey. And I know we barely scratched the surface there, but in Italy and how you've used that in those relationships. So I cannot wait to see you guys in action. I'm looking forward to it. I say this on my regular show all the time. I'm like, I am deeper into this football team than I ever have been in my life. And this is a kid in 2005 when I moved up here. They were just starting – the Bears were just starting to make that switch to the D1 level. And I remember I was working for the UNC Mirror, the small paper, and interviewing coaches and players. And it was foreign to me because that was all new. Didn't know anything about UNC. And then I got to know him a little more. We've been broadcast partners with UNC for so long, but this is the most connected I've ever been. So I really appreciate you guys helping me along the way because, man, next year is going to be just flat out fun.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. We appreciate the support. We appreciate your guys' kindness. All the media here in Greeley, just really good people. Get to know you guys well. It's fun. Appreciate you for all that you do to help support our program. It's awesome.
It makes it easy when you guys come in here and you can tell your stories. That's what it's all about. Pellegrini soon. You and me at some point, Coach. Let's make it happen.
Let's do it. It's super good. It's super good.
James Pazak, special teams coordinator for the UNC Bears. Fun conversation with you, my friend. And we'll look to do it very soon. And yeah, we'll catch up really soon too.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
All right. That'll do it. Football 52. This has been episode 16. 17 will be out next week.